Let's read together Genesis 31, beginning at verse 22, right on through verse 35. Now, in these verses, we read that Laban pursued Jacob and overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. Laban intended either to harm Jacob or force him to return to Haran, but God protected Jacob. Genesis 31, beginning at verse 22. And Laban was told on the third day that Jacob had fled. Then he took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days' journey, and he overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, "Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad." So Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mountains of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with the sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with timbrel and harp. And you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly in so doing. It is in my power to do you harm. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad.' And now you have surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods?" Then Jacob answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid, for I said, 'Perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force. With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live. In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have of yours and take it with you.' For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the two maids' tents, but he did not find them. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household idols, put them in the camel's saddle, and sat on them. And Laban searched all about the tent, but did not find them. And she said to her father, 'Let it not displease my father that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is with me.' And he searched, but did not find the household idols." Let's consider a few background notes, first of all. After 20 years of working for Laban, Jacob decided to head for home. He left with his family and flocks, but he did not tell his father-in-law, Laban, that he was leaving. Jacob knew that Laban would not approve of his leaving because Jacob was the key to Laban's material prosperity. You remember, Jacob had served honorably, and God had blessed his efforts. As a result, Laban had prospered, and Laban knew it. In Genesis 30, he says there in verse 27, "I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake." Sure enough, when Laban found out that Jacob had left, he and his men pursued Jacob and overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. This would be the area in Jordan today, somewhere in the vicinity where the countries of Jordan and Syria come together. With a lot of bravado and blustery talk, Laban accused Jacob of shameful behavior, and he accused him of stealing his gods or his idols. Jacob denied these charges, but he did not realize that Rachel, his wife, had stolen Laban's idols. Now, these idols were mostly small, handheld, female, doll-like images that were thought to bring blessing and fertility. You remember, Rachel only had one child at this time. So Rachel may not have been totally freed up from these pagan ideas. Furthermore, these household idols or teraphim were used as title deeds to the property in that culture, and may be one of the reasons why Rachel wanted them. We can't be sure. In any case, when Laban came into Rachel's tent to search for these idols, Rachel did not stand up for her father, which was the normal thing to do in that culture. And we read in verse 35 that she said, "Let it not displease my Lord that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is with me." And he searched, but he did not find the household idols. By the way, having the camel's saddle in the tent was not unusual in that day. When traveling, the saddles were brought into the tent and used as furniture. Well, so much for background notes. Let's move now to our doctrinal or teaching points. Doctrinal point number one, believers are guaranteed God's protection when they are doing God's will. Believers are guaranteed God's protection when they are doing God's will. Laban fully intended either to harm Jacob or force him to return to Haran. But God protected Jacob. We read in verse 24, "But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, 'Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad.'" And then in verse 29, we read that Laban said to Jacob, "It is in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad.'" The good here would be offering Jacob some kind of good deal or inducement to return to Haran. The significant point here is that Jacob was doing God's will and God protected him. Back in verse 3 of this chapter, we read, "Then the Lord said to Jacob, 'Return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you.'" So when Jacob left Laban and headed home with his family and flocks, he was doing God's will. God wanted Jacob home. In fact, back in chapter 28 and verse 15, when Jacob was at Bethel, God promised that he would bring Jacob back home. So Jacob was doing God's will and God protected him. The same is true for us today. Believers are guaranteed God's protection when they are doing God's will. This is just another way of saying that believers are immortal until their work on earth is done. This does not mean that Christians don't have fatal car accidents or don't die from cancer or aren't called upon to be martyrs. But it does mean that we do not have to fear the opposition or try to appease the opposition if we are doing what God has called us to do. He's with us and he will protect us. Obviously, we must use our common sense. That's part of God's protective system, along with guardian angels and circumstances and other means, even dreams to unbelievers, as we see in this case here. Believers are guaranteed God's protection when they are doing God's will. Listen as I read some verses from Psalm 91, one of the great protection guarantees in the Bible for believers who are doing God's will. Beginning at verse 3, "Surely he shall deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the perilous pestilence. He shall cover you with his feathers, and under his wings you shall take refuge. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid of the terror by night, nor of the arrow that flies by day, nor of the pestilence that walks in darkness, nor of the destruction that lays waste at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side, and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you." Verse 9, "Because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your habitation, no evil shall befall you, nor shall any plague come near your dwelling. For he shall give his angels charge over you to keep you in all your ways. They shall bear you up in their hands, lest you dash your foot against a stone." Those were some verses read from Psalm 91. So once again, you see our doctrinal point. Believers are guaranteed God's protection when they are doing God's will. Now, doctrinal point number two. Believers are not guaranteed smooth sailing when they are doing God's will. Believers are not guaranteed smooth sailing when they are doing God's will. God protected Jacob as he traveled home, but that did not mean that Jacob had an easy trip. Think of the logistics of moving a large family and flocks and herds almost 500 miles. God told Jacob to go home, but he did not do some miracle for getting him there. No heavenly chariots or air-conditioned trucks. Just the hard work of logistics normal for that day. And then there was the opposition from Laban. God protected Jacob from Laban, but it was not a pleasant experience. You see, Jacob was not guaranteed smooth sailing, even though Jacob was doing God's will. The same is true for us today. Believers are not guaranteed smooth sailing when they are doing God's will. Some Christians think that when they are doing God's will, they will have smooth sailing. In fact, they think that if they are not experiencing smooth sailing, then they are out of God's will. The Bible does not teach this. Look at the life of the Apostle Paul. He did not have smooth sailing all the time, but he was certainly doing God's will. God allows the storms of life to teach us many lessons. And the storms of life can come in all kinds of varieties, physical, emotional, spiritual. We can be sure that the Lord is with us in the storms of life. But remember, believers are not guaranteed smooth sailing when they are doing God's will. Now, what about practical application from this section? Be careful about making rash statements. Be careful about making rash statements. In verse 32, Jacob made a rash statement. Laban had accused Jacob of stealing his idols, and Jacob reacted with this rash statement: "With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live." It reminds us of that rash statement that the judge Jephthah made back there in Judges chapter 11. Do you remember that? Jephthah said that if the Lord would give him the victory, that he would sacrifice to the Lord whatever came out of his house first. Be careful about making rash statements. Jephthah was wrong to make such a rash statement. And Jacob should have been more careful here about making this rash statement. He wasn't aware that Rachel had stolen the gods, the idols. You see the lesson here? Be careful about making rash statements. Did you ever make a rash statement? Just last year, I made a rash statement in one of my classes. One of my students built me a model of Noah's Ark. He built it out of balsa wood to N-gauge scale. N-gauge means that the ark is about 3 feet long. Railroad boxcars would be about 3 inches long in N-gauge scale. Well, it's a great model, but the only problem was we couldn't find any N-gauge animals. We were able to find some N-gauge cows and sheep, farm animals, but I wanted some giraffes and lions and elephants, but all the hobby stores said they didn't make any. So I foolishly said in my class one day, if any student here can get me some N-gauge giraffes and elephants, I'll give them an A in the course, something like that. Now, that was a rash statement. Guess what? 2 weeks later, a student arrives, and sure enough, he's got N-gauge giraffes, N-gauge lions, N-gauge elephants, in fact, two sets so I could, you know, put two by two coming up into the ark. Unbelievable. Now, fortunately, this student was already an A student, so I, like Jacob, here, escaped the consequences of my rash statement. But sometimes we get ourselves into real serious trouble by the rash statements that we make. Would you agree? So you follow the practical application, right? Be careful about making rash statements.